found in the second book of Kings, the 10th chapter. We were speaking to you last week about that wicked person Jezebel, how that she met the end of her life when these attendants cast her down out of the window, right down upon the cement, and how that her head was dashed against the wall, and how that the blood spattered on the wall and all over the ground, and how that Jehu, who was upon a horse, he trampled her under the horse's foot. And this is the way that this woman, Jezebel, came to an untimely end. And we find likewise that Jehu went and sat down to have something to eat. And while he was eating, he began to think about this woman. He had left her out there, and he remembered that she was a king's daughter. She not only was a king's daughter, but she was a mother of a king. Not only was she a mother of a king, but she was also a wife of a king, and she also had been a grandmother to a king, all in her lifetime. And now, because he had a certain respect to her sex, he commanded that they should go and see where she was and bury her. He had forgot what the prophet had said. The prophet had said that the dogs would eat Jezebel and that she would not be buried. And when these messengers went to find Jezebel, they found nothing of her. There she was. She had been eaten by the dogs while he was eating his meal. The dogs didn't care about whether she was a king's daughter or not. These dogs that went about the city had done this quite often to human beings. They were mad dogs, dogs that were hungry and fierce. And this is the way that the word of the prophet Elijah was fulfilled in Jezebel's case, that they found nothing but the palms of her hands and her feet. That's all that was left of this woman, Jezebel. How God visited this woman for her sins. As she had caused Naboth to be stoned to death, she had put so many prophets of the Lord to death because she wanted idolatry in her country and she didn't want them to serve the living God. And now God came back to her and visited her for her numerous sins. Oh, what an awful ending of her life, my hearers. And not only was it terrible to die in this way, but her immortal soul was lost forever and ever. And now this man, Jehu, he had been anointed for this express purpose that he should destroy all the house of Ahab. And he went forward to do it so barbarously. He didn't consider anything of the kind how that he would do it. And now Ahab, he had 70 sons in Samaria. And he sent letters to the rulers in Samaria, the elders there, the bringers up of Ahab's children. And he requested in those letters that they take the most able-bodied man of Ahab, one of the sons, and set him on the throne and fight for your master's house. But they were afraid. They said two kings couldn't stand before him, and how are we going to stand before him? It may be interesting for you to know that Ahab had 70 sons. You would say, well, where did he get 70 sons from? You know, in the eastern part of the world, they practiced what they call polygamy. Not amongst the poor people so much, but amongst the rich and amongst the rulers. These men, they had a number of concubines, not only just a legal wife that they were married to, but they had numerous concubines. Studying about this matter, I found that there was a Shah in Persia. He had 300 wives, and he had 115 sons by these wives, these concubines, and he had three by the queen, a total of 118 sons. Another one, an emperor of Morocco in the year 1720, he likewise had over 1,000 women in a harem. And in this reign of this emperor, he reigned quite a long time, he had over 300 male children from all these wives that he had. So when you read that Ahab had 70 sons, you can understand that they came from his concubines. And they were all related to him. And now this Jehu, he sent these letters to this place, and they refused to send anybody on the throne to fight against him. So then he sent another letter. He requested that they take the heads of these sons and bring them to him, to Jezreel. And now these here elders and these rulers in this city of Samaria, they commenced to take these 70 sons, and they slew them. They cut their heads off, and they put them in baskets, and they brought them to Jehu. What an awful thing. What an awful ending of their lives. Surely, there were many young men amongst them, and they probably were old enough to sit upon the throne. And all of them were taken, and all of them were slain. Oh, the judgment of God upon the house of Ahab. God had said by the mouth of Elijah that the house of Ahab would most certainly be destroyed. And God fulfills his word, my hearers. We read likewise in the second commandment that God visits unto the third and unto the fourth generation upon those that hate him. He even visits them, the children of fathers and mothers that have sinned so greatly against him. And this is what Ahab and his wife had done. They had worshipped idols. They had bowed down unto images. They had flooded the country with this idolatrous worship. And God came and visited now. And now these 70 sons were slain in this way. And they brought the heads to Jehu. And he said, put them outside of the gate of the city. And they made two heaps. And he went out the next morning and he looked at them. And he says to the people, I conspired against my master, he says. Ye are righteous. But he says, who slew all them? Instead of fighting for their country and for their city, they just slew all these young men. My hearers, this question, who slew all these? Now when you consider from the beginning of time unto the present time, how many people have lived upon the face of this earth? How many people have passed away and have been buried in the ground? And when you look at your own short life and you look forward, you say, well, there's a time coming when I have to die. You look back at your relatives, your father, your mother, maybe your wife, maybe your husband. They've gone the way of all the earth. And then when you look forward to the day of judgment, when all the world will be assembled before that great throne, and when Jesus will sit upon the throne, and when he will speak unto the wicked, depart from me, ye wicked, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and all his angels. And then that question, which Jehu said, who slew all these, may be brought to this. Who slew all them? Sin. Sin is the cause, my hearers, of all the misery and of all the death that has been upon the face of this world. Sin has made this world like a hospital, like a slaughtering ground, a burying ground. Oh, my hearers, sin and that monster, something that you and I have in us, shall we then take and shall we then love that thing, sin? Shall we keep it in our breast? Oh, what a mercy, my hearers. If we are given to hate sin, to flee from it, oh, to shun it, to despise it, to detest it, for it'll be sin that'll be the cause of your and my misery if we are cast away in that great day. It will be sin that we will be turned back from the presence of God into that place where hope shall never come. And now this man Jehu, he proceeds to go forward. And as he's going forward, he's riding towards the city, he meets a group of men, 42 men. And he questioned them who they were. And they said that they were sons of Ahaziah. And they were going down to visit the king and the queen's children. So he says to them, take them alive. So they took them and they brought them to the shearing house. And they slew every one of them, 42 men. So they were connected to the house of Ahab, because the king of Judah and the king of Israel, they were linked together in their families. And therefore these 42 men were taken and slain. And now we find that as Jehu proceeds, he meets a man by the name of Jehonadab, a son of Rechab. And as he meets him, he says unto him, is thine heart as my heart is? This man, Jehonadab, he was a righteous man, a God-fearing man. And he could say yes to that question. He was wholly in favor of what Jehu was doing. That Jehu had an express command from God to destroy the house of Ahab, and likewise, he was a reformer. He was turning the people back to worship God. And therefore, this man, Jehonadab, he could say yes to the question, and he shook hands with him, and he got up on the wagon with him. He says, come with me and see my zeal for the Lord. Oh, what a zeal Jehu had to perform the commandment that God had given him to do. This zeal that Jehu had, my hearers, was not of an inward principle of grace. This zeal was ambition and animosity against the house of Ahab. And now we find that he took this man along with him. And when they came into Samaria, then Jehu proceeds to slay all that remained of the house of Ahab in the city of Samaria. He left not one living. They all died. He fulfilled then this commandment that God gave him to do. And now he proceeds likewise to reform the city. He calls a solemn assembly of Baal. This worship of Baal had been spread throughout this country by Ahab and his wife. And now we find that he said he was going to worship Baal better than Ahab did. The king that had been before him, he had closed the house of Baal and he had shut down the altars of Baal. But now Jehu, he opened them up again. He done it in subtlety. He done it with the purpose of destroying all the worshipers of the house of Baal. And therefore he sent throughout all the land that everyone that worshiped Baal should come up to this solemn assembly. This, what Jehu did, was not necessary because he was lying. And God don't need anybody to lie to him, my hearers. But he done it in subtlety so that he could destroy them all. It would have been an endless task for him to go through all the country and kill them one by one. So he decided to do it this way. He gathered them all together. And now he separated 80 men. He says to them, men, you stay outside of this temple. He says, don't let one get away. And he gave vestments to every one of those worshipers. And then he went through the worshipers and found out whether there were any of the servants of God in there. He didn't want to kill any of them. He wanted them separated. But he did this too in subtlety, meaning to prove to the worshipers of Baal that this was only for them. And you would think that these people would have got wise to what he was going to do, but they didn't. They thought it was a wonderful thing. Joram, he had closed the temple of Baal, but now Jehu, he opened it again, and they were happy. Oh, they were going to see good days now, and therefore they all came. And after they had all been gathered into this temple of Baal, then Jehu gave the sign, and he sent in the soldiers with swords, and they slew every one of these worshippers of Baal. How awful, my heroes. What an awful thing to die while you are worshiping what? An image. Worshiping an idol. That is the way these people lost their lives. Jehu cut them all off. And then he went and proceeded to destroy the house of Baal. It was called a city. And there were so many places where these Baal's prophets lived with their wives and with their families. They destroyed their houses. They destroyed everything that was connected with the worship of Baal. They destroyed the image. They destroyed the shrines. They destroyed all those little things and the pictures that they had of this particular image. They were all destroyed by Baal, by Jehu. So Jehu destroyed Baal out of Israel. And now God came to him, and God said unto him, because thou hast done what was in my heart, and thou hast kept my commandment, therefore unto the fourth generation thy sons shall sit upon the throne of Israel. He was then rewarded for what he had done for God. God rewarded him in this life, my hearers. And I want you to take particular notice of this man, Jehu. In the first place, he was anointed by God to be king. But he was not anointed by the Holy Spirit and by the grace of God. Jehu, he had a wonderful zeal to keep the commandment that God gave him to do it. But he had not that zeal that God gives unto his dear children. His zeal was a zeal of hatred and animosity. But the zeal that God gives unto his dear children, we may find that in the Lord Jesus Christ. That when he came into this world, he was filled with zeal. He rested not until he had triumphed upon the cross of Calvary. He bruised the head of serpent, the devil, and he entered into death and triumphed over death. And he ascended up into heaven, and he rests at the right hand of his Father, waiting that all his enemies will submit unto him. All this zeal is tempered with meekness, with humility, as we may see it in the Lord Jesus Christ. This zeal, Jehu, knew nothing of. This man, Jehu, he likewise, as we read in this chapter, he did not put away the high places that Jeroboam had set up. These places where they worshipped in Dan and Bethel, he remained, he let them remain, and he himself worshipped at them. And he did not walk in the law of the Lord his God with all his heart to march against him. He remained an idolater himself, and he did not walk according to the commandment of the Lord with all his heart. And my hearers, when we look at this man, we see that God even gave his approbation upon him. God even rewarded him for what he had done for him. But God didn't say that his sons would be with him in glory. God gave him that his sons would reign for four consecutive generations upon the throne of Israel. But he did not promise Jehu nor his sons that they would be with him in heaven above. See then in this man who said unto Jehonadab, come, see my zeal for the Lord, how far it can go with a person, my hearers, and still it can be lost. Lost forever. See it in this man, Jehu. Oh, when I thought of it, I trembled myself. Oh, to think it can go so far with a person, and then to think lost forever. This is what happened to Jehu. All my hearers, when God gives a person that grace in his heart, then he isn't like Jehu. No. Jehu, he still served the idols that were at Dan and at Bethel. And Jehu did not walk in the law of the Lord his God with all his heart. But where God begins a good work of grace, my hearers, then when this takes place, and I hope it takes place in every one of your lives, then all the idols that you have, you will destroy. You would not want them anymore. Oh, believe me, my hearers. Oh, if you have any idols in your home, when the grace of God comes into your heart, out they go. Books that you took so much liking to and that you spent hours in reading, stories that were fiction that weren't true, you take them and you burn them. You don't want them in your home anymore. You would want to keep them out if possible if you are the parent of it. And my hearers, God writes his law upon the table of the hearts of each and every one of his children. And all they want to love God with all their heart. They want to walk before him in truth and in sincerity. All they want to do whatever is possible that they could do against sin, against the world, against the flesh. That they want to live holy. They want to obey God. They want to serve him. They say in Sabbath, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I wonder how many of my hearers have that in their hearts. Has the grace of God ever done that to you, my hearers? Have you cast all the idols out of your home and out of your life? All the things that you enjoyed and that you bowed to and worshipped, that you gave everything over to, have you forsaken all them? And have you had that principle of love in your heart? All that warm feeling for God. All that God in heaven above. You loved him. And you wanted to be like him. He's holy and you wanted to be holy. Oh, what a mercy, my hearers. If you have this principle within you, then you are not like Jehu. Oh, yes, Jehu was lost forever. But anyone that has this beginning in their hearts, they are on the right road, and they most certainly will end in glory above. And now we find in the next chapter, my hearers, a woman by the name of Athaliah. And she was a wife of a king. And this son, Ahaziah, was her son who had been killed and slain by Jehu. And when she heard that her son was dead, she arose and she slew all the seed royal. Now this woman, Athaliah, she was the daughter of Jezebel. The woman that I've just been speaking to you about that met such an untimely death. And now this woman, as she did this because she had an ambition to rule. And she arose and she slew all the seed royal. She slew every child that her own son had, Ahaziah. She slew everybody that had any connection to become king or queen in the royal family. But there was one young child who God had his eye upon. As Moses was spared when Pharaoh gave that terrible commandment that all the children should be killed, so this child was spared by the providence of God. When God wants someone spared, they're spared. He'll raise up protectors for them. And now we find that Jehoshaphat, and she likewise was a daughter of Ahaziah. She was married to a Jehoiada, the priest. And she took this child and she hid him in one of the inner chambers of the temple. She took this child. I guess Athaliah didn't notice it and didn't take too particular notice that one was missing. So this child was hid in the temple by this aunt. 6 years he was hid there. How wonderful was the providence of God over this young lad called Joash. My hearers, this Athaliah, you would say, how is it possible a woman of her sex slaying so many? You know, it's often said that grandmothers, they have more feeling and more love for their grandchildren than they do for their own. It isn't true all the time. But if you take particular notice, you'll see some grandparents. Oh, they got their little grandchildren right at hand. They walk down the streets with them. You know, when they had children of their own, maybe they never did that. They're so affected to their grandchildren. What I want to bring to you is, this woman, she slew them. You would say, how is it possible that she could do such a thing? This wicked woman, Athaliah. And now we find that this here little boy, he was taken care of in the temple. The providence of God took care of him. It was by the providence of God that this daughter of this wicked king was married to a godly priest. And now he was in this temple 6 years, and Athaliah knew nothing about it. She reigned all these 6 years as queen. And now this Jehoiada, he was a God-fearing man, a good man. He did much for the worship of God and for the people in the land. And now the time came for him and his wife to bring out this young man and to place him upon the throne. So he brought in all the elders of the people, the rulers amongst the tribes, and he brought them all to Jerusalem. And he spake unto them and told them that they had hid this little boy in the temple, and that he was the rightful heir to the throne, and that they were going to place him on the throne. And now they should set a guard around him and protect him so that he would not be slain. And the time came that he decided that they would proclaim him king. So he had all the people come to the temple, and they anointed him and they made him king. And the people all began to shout, God save the king. And now this Athaliah, when she heard all this noise and all the people shouting, she ran to the temple. She wanted to see what was going on there. She was queen and she came alone. She didn't even have anybody that cared for her, it seemed. She wasn't even attended by anybody. You know, kings and queens don't usually go out alone. They're always watched over by God, but she had nobody. And she came to the temple, and when she seen what was going on in the temple, and she seen that little boy standing by the altar, and the people all proclaiming, God save the king, she began to shout, treason, treason! If anybody had committed treason, she had. She had slain all the royal family. The one that's the most guiltiest, they are the one that cry out the loudest. That's the way it was with her. Josephus says, she cried out that he should be slain. Kill him, she says. Don't let him live. That's what Josephus says. But now Jehoiada, he had commanded those that were round about this king that they should not kill this woman in the temple. They should not shed her blood in the temple. He says, take her outside of the ranges and slay her there. So she proceeded to flee, and she was caught where the horses come in by the gate. And there they slew her. Athaliah, this wicked woman, was slain by the attendants that took care of this young king. And now this man, Jehoiada, he proceeded to make a covenant with the people. And he proceeded in this temple to say unto the people, now is the time that we should be joined to God. Let us make a covenant, the king and the people, and we will become the Lord's people. He had them all there, and he gave this direction, which was a good one, so that the people all joined in covenant and all consented to be the Lord's people. And now they went out of the house of this temple, and they went to the house of Baal, and they destroyed the house of Baal. You would say, well, you just said that they destroyed it before. But that was in Israel, my hearers. Now we have in Judah this wicked queen Athaliah, and she had again raised up the service and the worship of Baal in that country. And now it had to be destroyed again. And these people went out and they destroyed it. And they broke the house down and they killed this Matan, the man that was the leader and the priest of Baal. They slew him at the altar. And they made this place a draught house, a common sewer where they threw all the garbage. And that was the end of this Baal worship in Judah. And now these people, they had now a king to reign over them. And now this young boy, he had a wonderful advisor, Jehoiada, the priest. He was a God-fearing man. And all the days that this Joash reigned as king and Jehoiada lived, he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord. This Joash then, he had it in his heart to repair the temple of the Lord. He seen that it was in a decayed condition. And many of the sons of Athaliah, they likewise had broken a number of the things down that belonged to the temple. And now when he seen the temple in ruins, he had it in his heart to repair it. So he called Jehoiada the priest and the other Levites, and he requested them that they bring in that collection that Moses had laid upon the people, and that they use the money to repair the temple. But it went on that way until the 23rd year of his reign. Nothing was done to the temple. It didn't seem like that they wanted to fix the temple and repair it. They had no heart to do it, it seems, and the people didn't seem to want to give either. But then he called the priest in again, Jehoiada, and said to him, how come, he says, that the temple is still in ruins? He says, I request, he says, that money be gathered and that the temple be repaired. So then they build a big chest, and they drilled a hole in the middle of the chest, and they put this outside of the temple, and the people could give as much as they wanted to give. They weren't requested to give what Moses had laid upon them. When this was laid upon them, they didn't want to give. But now when they could give freely, as much as they wanted to, the chest was full in no time. And when the priest seen that it was full, they took the money out, and then it was full again. And the money was given to the priest and to the king, and they used it to pay the masoners, the carpenters, and everybody that worked on the temple, and that way the temple was repaired. See in this young man, my hearers, how far it can go with a person again. I spoke to you about Jehu, but look at this young man. If you read his history, you say, how wonderful God spared him, how wonderful God put him on the throne, how wonderful he was, even with that having in his heart to repair the temple of God. He had something over for it. And as long as Jehoiada was priest, he did that which was right in the sight of God. Jehoiada, he was spared until he was 130 years old. A long life, my hearers. And it was a blessing unto the country that he was spared that long. Very few people attained the age of 100. This man lived to be 130 years of age, and then he died. And now what do we find this young man doing, Joash? He isn't young anymore. We find that the princes came to him, and they bowed down to him, and they reverenced him, and they worshipped him, and they told him that they were glad that Jehoiada had died. For now he was from under the discipline and under the laws of Jehoiada, for he always obeyed this man, Jehoiada. But now he was king now, and he didn't have anybody to advise him. Now he could do as he pleased. And these princes, they requested that he would raise up these altars again, these idolatrous altars, and that he would institute the worship again of idolatry. Did he listen to what Jehoiada had taught him? He went along with these young men. He permitted them to build these idols and these images and these altars throughout his country. And it was just filled with them. And God sent unto them prophets to speak unto the people, to warn them, to tell them not to worship such things, but to worship the true and living God. But these people wouldn't listen to the prophets. They went on against all warnings and admonitions, and they did not obey God. And this king likewise, we see him going along with these princes, falling into idolatry. And now this Jehoiada, he had a son by the name of Zechariah. And this Zechariah, he got up on a pulpit and he began to speak unto the people and warn them in the name of God and according to what Moses had said in Deuteronomy, that if they forsook God, they could expect his wrath to come down upon them. But this king, he said unto some that were round about this Zechariah, take him and slay him. Oh, my hearers, how is it possible, you would say, that he would have the son of this godly priest slain just like that? Without any hearing, without anything being said to him, he was just taken with wicked hands and was killed. And this king had that done. You would say, if you follow his life, there must be something good in that man's heart. And now you see what came out of it. When he got from under the tuition of this man, Jehoiada, after he had died, then came out what was in his heart. Oh, my hearers, how deceitful and desperately wicked are our hearts. How we can conceal so much from people outwardly until God at a certain time lets us loose, and then he gives people to see what we are. Or how we can cloak a profession of religion with good works, with love, with zeal like Jehu, and then in the end prove that we are still hypocrites. Oh, how necessary to search and examine ourselves, whether we are in the faith or not, as the apostle says. All these examples that I've been speaking to you about, my hearers, should make every one of us tremble. If we have made a profession of religion, all should be in our hearts, search me, O God, and try me. And know my heart and see if there is any wicked way in me. And if so, lead me in the way everlasting. My time is gone, my hearers. Next week, the Lord willing, we will again pick up our lesson from this particular point. That's all for today.